for artists, there's an internal drive that is so powerful and so strong, and it's like a life force inside that directs people and pushes people and forces people to go beyond what other people would normally do.
Hey everyone, this is Julie Wake from the Arts Foundation of Cape Cod. Welcome to Season 6 of the Creative Exchange Podcast. We continue our celebration of artists, arts leaders, and the brilliant minds shaping the creative landscape. From painters to performers, writers to visionaries, we delve into the diverse world of creativity to discover what it truly means to be an artist in today's dynamic and ever-evolving landscape. I hope you'll join me on this creative journey. And if you like these conversations, leave a rating or a review. Share with a friend. Help us shine a bright light on our creative corner of the world here on Cape Cod. We'd like to thank our sponsor, William Ravis Real Estate, as the official real estate company of the Arts Foundation. We'd like to thank our sponsors, the Cape Cod Melody Tent, the Kelly Foundation, the Woods Hole Foundation, and the Cape Cod Foundation. We couldn't do it without your support. We'd like to thank Bank 5 and the Cooperative Bank of Cape Cod. Thank you for supporting the arts. Hello, everyone. In this episode of the Creative Exchange Podcast, we embark on a unique journey, delving into a topic that has always fascinated me, the distinctive way in which artists perceive the world. Our guest for this intriguing exploration is psychotherapist Rick Miller, who expertly unravels the intricate tapestry of the artistic mind and the driving life force that sets artists apart from others. We hope this episode offers you as much insight and inspiration as it did for us. Join us as we dive into the inner workings of the artist's psyche and gain a deeper understanding of the extraordinary creativity that defines their unique perspective. Rick, welcome.
Julie.
Welcome
to
the Arts Foundation's Creative Exchange Podcast. It's so amazing to have you. And I have been wanting to talk about this subject for years now, about rejection through the eyes of an artist, resiliency, how artists navigate the world completely differently than maybe the rest of us.
Yes. I'm excited to talk about that. And interestingly enough, a lot of my information comes from here, because about 10 to 15 years ago, my partner and I led a series of workshops called Marketing for Artists, and it ended up being a three-day retreat for artists that the Arts Foundation sponsored. And I, as the psychotherapist, would bring in the human element about marketing, about business, about creativity. I learned so many things about creative people and artists and the unique characteristic of artists. So this is exciting.
This is. It's such a cool conversation. So how do artists think differently than the rest of us?
Artists are so different. And it's all going to seem obvious and make sense. And for those of you listening that live with artists, you'll be shaking your head, yes, and thinking, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Artists are creatures of their own type. And in life, most of us do what we do. We hopefully pursue things that interest us and feel good about that. But for artists, there's an internal drive that is so powerful and so strong, and it's like a life force inside that directs people and pushes people and forces people to go beyond what other people would normally do and follow their calling. And over the years, as a psychotherapist, as I've worked with artists, it's been interesting to me how people are drawn and pulled in by particular things that interest them at a moment in time. It could be a color, it could be a medium, it could be anything. And then they're through with it, and then they move to something else with the same fervor. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's never ending. And it's fascinating to me to watch, because I want to figure out what makes you tick. Because most people aren't like this. And so I think that is what makes an artist unique. And there's a very specific pull and very detailed. Artists are very detailed with what they're paying attention to.
That's so interesting because, as you mentioned, you know, this pull and this drive and this curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, we see some artists that study the same
yes.
thing for weeks,
over and over, and
years,
over
again. Decades, mm-hmm. over and over again. What is that about? Like, what is that?
I mean, I can't even answer that because sometimes I'm watching my artist friends who don't appear intellectual studying the nuances of a moment in time in history that for some peculiar reason pulls them in, and they will get books and they will go online and they will understand everything about that particular thing that interests them. And my question is, which is like your question, why is this so interesting to you? Why do you feel compelled to be the person that focuses on this thing mm-hmm. that you bring to the rest of us?
Mm. Do you think it's something, and I have this conversation with my daughter, yeah. who's an artist.
Who's really talented.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I watch her, you know, you and I both live yeah. with artists.
Yes.
Who are very driven and self-motivated.
Yes.
In that particular area. The whole house could be crashing down.
Correct. Correct.
And they're focused on this.
Yes.
You know, portrait or making origami swans or birds and frogs and stuff like that. So it's really interesting to see, like, is my daughter born with this, or is this, she's just been given the access to it? Is it a combination?
Probably a combination. I mean, I went to your house for dinner and we walked in your daughter's room and
so embarrassing.
Suddenly, no, it was amazing. It was like, there was a lost sense of time.
Yes.
She's a teenager, but she may as well have been a 60-year-old artist whose life work was posted on her wall. And there were a variety of images, and there was a seriousness and an intensity to her work that pulled me in, because I'm used to working with artists, and I can see that she was working out her life issues through her creative process. And as she spoke about her work, the nuances and the details and the things that spoke to her and were meaningful to her were very clear. So suddenly, again, no sense of age. Your daughter's an adolescent
right.
who in that moment was an adult established artist with skills and a way of thinking that was sophisticated and powerful. And so that's a description of an artist. And what you mentioned a few moments back, the house could be burning. Artists probably have ADD or ADHD, and they can hyper-focus. And the state of focusing that's so powerful is a state called flow.
Right.
And we all know what a yeah. flow state is. It's when something becomes so powerful and so profound that we lose sense of time and place, and we're just in it. Mm. And artists in the creative process create their best work in those moments, and they strive to get there. And sometimes you can get there effortlessly and easily, and other times, no matter how hard you try, you can't get there. But that is the state of creation that's so exciting.
That is so exciting. Thinking about, even with my own work,
yeah.
like thinking about getting into
yes.
that flow state,
yes.
and you're like, oh, that felt so good. I just was so,
so
productive.
True. And it can be with any activity. It can be exercise. It can be writing. It can be cooking. It can mm-hmm. be anything that you do mm-hmm. that feels so intense. But for creative people, of course, it's doing the creative thing that they love to do.
Mm, I love that. Let's talk about rejection.
This is a good one. Oh.
Right? So an artist is like, you know, they are some of the most committed community yeah. members.
Yes.
They do things for others. They're asked to do things for free on a regular basis.
And exposing way more of themselves.
Yes.
Through sharing such an intimate part of themselves, their work, than any other person out there. So here's my analogy yeah. that I say to people. Mm-hmm. When you work at a shoe store, you run down to the basement. You get the inventory of shoes for your customer. You hope they're going to like what you have and that they're going to like what you're selling and you feel good.
Right.
Simple. An artist spends their life perfecting what they're working on and is working from that internal place of meaning and flow and self-expression. And when they share their work with the world, they may as well be coming out naked. It's such a big deal for them.
Right.
And what I learned from working with the Arts Foundation years ago, when we led these workshops, each artist would have a half hour or an hour to show their work to the group, and they would get not a critique in a critical way, but the other artists in the room would respond to their work and what spoke to them and what they liked, and we would come up with a marketing plan for each artist. Interesting, many artists are really self-conscious about exposing themselves and would rather keep their work hidden in a closet than bringing themselves out public. And this is where I come in. Because it's a normal reaction to want to be self-protective. But why spend a life with work when you're going to hide it, which is what many artists do.
I see that.
Like, yeah, of course you do.
Yeah. I've heard artists say, when I've introduced an artist that's, you know, perceived to be this very established
the biggest,
person.
Best, right?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, I'm very uncomfortable
totally.
Being described as
right.
an artist. I'm
right.
like, and, well, how should I describe you?
And when we did this seminar years ago, and we did it for 3 years, so I'm not saying one or two people. Every person,
yes,
before they would show their work, would get up and start stammering and start having hot flashes and go through a list of apologizing and explaining. And if they didn't have to show their work, they would avoid that. And frequently, they wouldn't let people see their work and they'd be up there for 5 or 10 minutes saying, I just want to explain a few things. And it's like, please keep quiet. Let us resonate with the beauty of your work and then we can go. However, I've had the experience, I don't think of myself as an artist, but I've taken art courses in photography, and I've worked with professional artists in the context of these courses.
Yeah, you're a creative person.
And suddenly, I'm like all the people I worked with, explaining and talking and apologizing and feeling so worthless.
Right, like all these disclaimers.
Yes, yeah. And this is a really hard challenge for people. But if you are an artist listening to us, put your work out, try your best to step back for a few moments and not say a word. Watch them, whether it's one person or a room of people, looking at your work, and wait for them to make meaning of what they see. Mm-hmm. And a few powerful things will happen. One is you're going to learn about how people resonate with your talent. And it's really good to know that. Mm-hmm. And you can engage in a really beautiful dialogue about what your work means to them. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I bought a painting from who now is a very good friend, but a neighbor who is an abstract painter. And I wanted a piece for my office in Truro, my home office. And so it was literally like a spiritual dance with each other, where we spoke about how we wanted the space to be and what I envisioned the piece would be and what I wanted it to feel like. And I was commissioning her to do a painting for me. But she said, I think I have something in my existing inventory that you'll like. And she came over, and you've seen it in my office in Truro. It was as if she channeled me whenever she painted it before she even knew me, for me. It was gorgeous in my space. My name is Rick, and in this abstract painting is some scribble that says Rick.
You're kidding me.
No, I mean, this is so weird. And so when I look at this painting, when I'm working throughout the day, it pulls me to me and centers me in a way that she would have never guessed as an artist. And so I'm going on a long story here to say that when you do your work as an artist, you cannot predict how other people are going to resonate with your work, and it's going to provide an experience for them that is so powerful and so strong, and you just have to accept that.
That's right. You just need to lean into the feedback, and I would think that you'd put yourself in a safe space to receive the feedback, right? I can't help but think about my time in school at Mass Art, where we would get these critiques, and I mean, people would cry.
Oh, yeah.
We were all immature anyway, but
even if you were an adult, it's so vulnerable.
It's so vulnerable. It's, and even in, you know, in high school, in that level, the kids that go through, or the students that go through the art departments, definitely put themselves out there more than any other area of study.
The most brave people in the world, if you ask me.
I agree, the artists.
Yeah.
The other thing I've been reading a lot lately is that, especially in this time of apprehension about believing and trusting what we're hearing in the world, that artists and arts leaders, cultural organizations, are one of the most trusted sources of information right now.
Wonderful. That's so good to hear.
Like, communities trust
cultural
organizations, and they trust artists to relay this information that's happening in the world.
Well, what I love about that is that creativity is like a religion.
It is.
It's an experience for the people who are creative that's so profound. And being willing to share the work means that that energy is being passed along. And a few weeks ago, I had a client that was talking about AI and how it's taking over the world and how artists are going to lose their jobs. And I said, I'm not sure about that. Here's why. We've seen how the internet has changed the creative field, and there are many more photographers and people dabbling in creative things, but you either got it or you don't.
Agree.
And a true artist will, their work will go beyond just being an image that was made in an electronic way, and people will continue searching for experience and meaning and powerful representation of what life is about. So I do believe that artists, like you're saying, bring something so significant to the world.
Yeah, so significant, unique. And I would also say, you know, when I see artists who have the ability to engage with a potential customer or with their audience, it's this relationship that AI will never be able to replace.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I have collected art over my adult life, and I can tell you about every piece I have.
Yeah, it's such a intimate meaning and experience.
Yeah, it grounds me. When I come home, I'm like, oh, this is so nice.
True.
And I'll never forget, my daughter had some friends over one day, and one of her little friends said, "Wow, you have a lot of art in the house." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's right. Like, not everybody does this."
I'm glad you're mentioning it because it reminds me of something important.
Yeah.
Many people feel intimidated about looking or many people feel intimidated by looking at art or mm-hmm. considering buying art because they think, what do I know? Right. I'm not sophisticated enough to know about art. And if I hadn't married an artist, I would continue to be one of those people. And I think the general public needs to trust that what they experience inside when they look at a piece of art is all that they need to know.
It's real.
Right. And whatever resonates for you is what it means.
That's right.
And that's why we buy art.
That's right.
Hopefully.
We buy it, we experience it through yeah. audio and visual and the written word. It's so important to humanity what these artists are doing.
And yet people don't know that they have the resources within themselves to make sense of it.
That's right. That's right. Let's talk about a little bit more about like resiliency. Like, how do we coach artists to be more resilient?
Yeah.
They're so sensitive.
Great question.
I mean, lots of artists yep. are sensitive. I don't want to say all artists
right.
are sensitive, but.
Okay, so I didn't really answer rejection. So let me start there, and then we'll go to resilience. So I think I started to answer the rejection question, and we bypassed it directly. But because of the intimate nature between an artist and what they're creating, the potential for rejection is so much stronger. Mm. And as I said, the creative person may as well be putting themselves out naked in front of the world. Mm-hmm. But as a result, what they fear is going to be worse than actual feedback. And then what they hear...
Because it's regret.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's just going to be perceived as something so much bigger than it is. So mm-hmm. when artists share their work to a potential buyer or a potential gallery or a potential publisher, if it's a writer, the feeling of rejection is so profound because it isn't this pair of shoes that I'm bringing out from the basement. It's me.
Right.
And so it's a lot of work to keep it in its place and recognize that getting feedback and being given suggestions really isn't necessarily rejection. It's an opportunity to hear from other people and institutions and other artists or people who buy art what they're experiencing, what they see, what resonates, what's not quite as strong in their work. And it's up to the artist and it's up to us, for those of us that are creative, to be able to learn how to hear feedback, to develop a thick skin, to appreciate that this kind of feedback is enormously helpful, not just critical, and that if we can be present instead of shutting down, then we're being given incredible opportunities to grow and push ourselves further and make the work even more amazing.
Right. And self-satisfying, right?
Yes.
Like, you're going to feel good.
It's so hard to get there. So you and I met through giving TEDx talks here in
right.
this very building.
And that's right.
We worked so hard.
So hard.
Sharing our work with each other. And we frequently said that we were working harder than many other people giving talks.
Yes.
We met for hours and hours and hours. And we went through our
Saturdays,
talks with
Sundays.
Each other with a fine-tooth comb.
We sure did.
It was the most stimulating process. And I would say for myself and probably for you,
yeah.
we learned so much from this process.
That's right.
And this is what creative people have as an opportunity if they're willing to step up.
That's so true. I'm so glad you brought that up because that was one of the most satisfying,
fascinating
parts of that process. It really was the journey.
It was.
Not the finished product.
And we talked about every facet of life during
That's right.
these conversations.
I mean, we could give each other's
talks.
Right. Like I started thinking about your talk more than my own talk because it does, it gets into your head. Where else can you get that kind of feedback?
Correct.
And had I worked in a little bubble with, you know, just my family listening to me over and over again, I never would have gotten away with that. Mm-hmm. And I never would have grown.
So this is a great example how artists can stretch beyond their comfort zone.
And it was uncomfortable.
Yes, but so good.
It was so good and I miss it.
Yes. Well, we'll find a new way.
We need a new project.
Yes. So that's the invitation. And resiliency is being able to endure pain and find joy and make meaning from pain. And some of the most profound moments of my professional existence as a psychotherapist are people that have been through traumas, people who have lost spouses, children, family members, best friends, and they say to me, I would never want to have to go through this, and I would never choose it for myself, but I learned so much about life and growth. And there's a saying that's popular in the field of trauma, and it's called post-traumatic growth.
Mm.
Now, it's a little dramatic to use this term for artists who get negative feedback about their work.
But it's traumatic.
But it is traumatic. So yes. Think about the term post-traumatic growth, that when you're traumatized by the potential of rejection or actual rejection, that you have an opportunity to grow from that experience. And maybe the growth is learning to sit with painful feedback, or maybe the growth is reinventing yourself in a particular way in order to be more successful.
Mm, I love that. What about if we take a step back and setting yourself up for not being so isolated?
That's really hard.
It's really hard because same thing, like you really got to make the time and the effort to not feel so isolated and to work in these like little bubbles that had we done that with our talks, it just would not have been like a broader view of,
correct,
you know, an accurate view of what we were talking about.
So creative people work by themselves and most artists have their own studios filled with their own private possessions and obsessions and everything else. And it's their own haven. And they don't want to let other people in. If I step into my husband's studio, he becomes apoplectic.
Okay, so that is such a funny, because we go into, I'll often say, hey, let us come into your studio.
No.
And I walk into a studio that is immaculate.
Immaculate.
And I'm like, there is no way. This is like sterile. I want to walk in. I want to see who you really are. And people are like, the artists tend to be like, well, I needed to clean up anyway. And it's like,
no. Oh, so they were busy hiding
all their
truth of themselves before you got there.
Yes. I always find that really funny, but I can relate. If someone pops into my house and I'm a mess, I'm devastated.
Okay. So this is worse than a messy house or your hair not looking perfect. This is like the insides ripped open.
Yeah.
And strewn around.
So probably shouldn't pop in on an artist in their studio.
Oh, I can tell you stories about friends that have popped over while Lauren has been working. It ain't pretty.
Because you're ruining the flow.
Right.
And you do have to make a mess.
Yes.
So you make a mess.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to be okay with it.
Yeah. So that's interesting. I said mess and you said immaculate. So people...
Yeah.
Transform their spaces.
Before I get there.
Right.
But I do that too. You do it too. We clean our
house. I always just leave my house clean.
That's true. That's right. That's the difference between right. you and I. I have to have people over to clean.
Right. I just pretend people are coming over and I keep it clean. We digress.
That's so funny. You were back to isolation.
Important. Oh, isolation. Thank you. Okay. Another really interesting thing about doing this group years ago with the Arts Foundation is it was interesting that people actually signed up for these workshops because it meant exposure. And these were like retreats that may have been spiritual experiences for them because artists that signed up were stepping out of their comfort zone, mm-hmm. not only sharing their work, but sharing their identity as an artist right. with each other. And again, it's all the same thing that I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
All of this is so profound and so personal that people are ultra protective and
intimidated, maybe too.
Intimidated and competitive.
Oh, that was next on my list.
Yes. So, on one hand, you feel horrible about yourself and embarrassed, and the best way to cope is by secluding yourself from others and not letting anyone in. And yet, on the other hand, mm-hmm. a part of you knows that you're really good, and you look at the work of other people and think, yeah. So it's a weird dichotomy simultaneously. And I have to say that as a psychotherapist, I understand mm-hmm. because a psychotherapist by nature is creative and the work that we're doing, ideally, comes from within ourselves and comes from a place of creativity. So I chose to be in a private practice because I got to close my door and no one could see me work except my poor client in front of me. Thank God they thought I was good.
Of course you are.
And as I kind of advanced in my career and I started teaching and writing and doing more trainings in the public eye,
yeah,
I had to expose myself. It's a little like hanging my work on the wall and seeing what people will think. That was the best thing for me. And I wish that I had done it earlier because I wasted a decade or so protecting myself. And I think artists are doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Isolating is important for creating and making great work. But time and time and time and time again, all these artists had a lifetime of work in their attics and in their closets
right.
that they don't do anything with. What's the point?
That's right.
Share it.
Share it
with the rest of us.
We want to see it.
We want to see it. And you bring so much to us, not only through your work, but through your take. Mm-hmm. on life. I have the best conversation in the world with artists about what life is about, what creativity is about, what motivates people, mm-hmm. about how people experience certain moments, nuance by nuance. It's so amazing.
It is amazing. And sometimes it's not even obvious, right? Like I have conversations with artists. I just had a conversation with a visual artist a couple weeks ago. She's going to be on the podcast, Sarah Dineen. And she just loves to sit back and watch people interact
wow.
with the work. Mm-hmm. And
her own work?
Her own work.
Oh, that's very secure.
Yes. And she also doesn't overtly tell you what this is about.
So it's as if her work is an installation.
It's totally an installation.
Oh, okay.
And it means a lot to her. It's a response to how she's viewing the world, how she's feeling.
That's so great.
But it's not overt. It's fascinating. So, she is definitely has her mind around, you know, climate, nature,
yeah.
social justice.
Yes.
And you might see it, but she doesn't tell you.
I love it. So when you do this podcast, and I'm going to listen to it,
yeah.
I want to know how she got to the place internally where she could allow others to go into this immersive experience without explaining, without apologizing, and just watch. How did she get there?
So she told me that she spends a lot of time doing artist residencies.
Oh,
Yeah. And so that is it's like constantly being critiqued yes. in an art school, right? And you're around peers. What a healthy perspective, right? Like
every
she's a good example.
Every creative person should do that.
Yes.
In some way. It doesn't have to be an artist residency program, but every creative person should share their work with other creative people and get reactions and feedback. Last weekend, I hosted a three-day-long writing retreat.
Oh, I saw that on social media.
It was fascinating. And I was with real artists, real writers. And, you know, I do happen to be an author, but I don't consider myself a real writer. And sharing the work with the group was exciting and scary and powerful and profound. And again, we just had these incredible conversations about many nuances of life. And that's what creativity is all about.
That's right. That connection, the humanity around it.
Absolutely.
It's the best job. Yeah. Let's talk about the marketing side of things.
Yes. Okay. This is so good.
Okay.
And it's so scary for artists because they're not creating for business purposes. They're creating out of passion.
Yeah, and sometimes they feel like they're sellouts or, you know, the best scenarios I've seen so far are sometimes artists create two bodies of work.
Mm, interesting.
One that they think is more for like the
public.
Broader public, right?
Yeah.
For it's more digestible. And then they do another body of work for themselves mm-hmm. and to get it out. And sometimes the miniatures or the spin-offs of the major work that feels good to them become these more scalable pieces that support the major piece of work. But
I would guess that the private work that you just described is probably their best work because it's coming from such a deep place within. And it may not seem marketable, but it is. But it's so personal. I have a client, gay man, grew up in a very religious background, and he is a beautiful painter, does beautiful images of men, and he's self-conscious about promoting his work based on how he grew up and his family's beliefs around homosexuality. So he sells his work, and he's developing a great reputation for himself, but he's still mortified based on, you know, he paints naked men and he doesn't want his family to see it.
Right.
So that's kind of an extreme of what you just described. But marketing involves selling.
Right. And it's not like they're selling this notebook. Right. They're selling something that
themselves.
They made. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say this because it sounds kind of cruel, but there are some people who grew up in the business world and they don't become artists until later in life. Mm. And they're really good at marketing. And sometimes what they do is they take their marketing skills and put that out there first, which is really good and sometimes not so good.
Yep.
Not so good when they don't perfect their work and they allow their smooth marketing skills to sell themselves, or it's lacking a certain sincerity. So I'm just putting that out as a warning. That's the flip side.
Yeah.
But I guess as we're talking today, what we keep coming back to is the reality that a gifted, talented person will find audiences out there of people who will be drawn to their work and want it for themselves, because people buy art, as you were saying, for the experience.
Yeah, that connection.
Yes,
with the artist.
With the artist, with a place and time,
with the place,
or a vacation, or a time in their lives where something spoke to them, and they want that.
That's right. And even musicians, you know, like local music, and you know, they'll go back to where they're from, or you know, oh, we got to go see them again, and it's really putting yourself out there and just letting it be.
When we led this marketing course years ago, you know, we talked about the four P's and kind of taking marketing basics and applying it to your work as an artist so that you can sell it, packaging, promotion, for example, and I'm looking at the brochures that you have in the office here, and it's how we sell.
Yes.
We live in a world where people aren't going to come to us and knock on our door and say, I want to buy your work. We have to put ourselves out there and have information about ourselves and be visible on the web and have social media pages and presence and share your work with the world. And frequently, people will follow you and be fascinated with you because you're an artist. And that's part of an allure. Artists have an allure that I do think it's their responsibility to put themselves out there and share with others, because you're living the life as an artist and a creative person where you're willing to go beyond the comfort zone, beyond other people. Right. And people will pursue you and follow you because they're drawn to that.
100%. 100%. That's so what are the other two P's?
Oh gosh. Promotion, packaging, I don't know. It's been so long. I've lost a few brain cells since then.
I'm like,
packaging, position.
Oh, positioning.
Promotion. Pricing.
Yes. There you go. Okay. I just didn't want anybody.
No, this is so important. And pricing is a good one, because most artists undervalue their work. And when you think about how many hours you've spent learning the skill of what you do, whether you're a musician or a writer or a painter or whatever,
right.
You've devoted your life to something and you deserve to be reimbursed for all that you've done.
That's right. It's intellectual property.
Correct.
And how can we coach artists to get that entrepreneurial mindset? Because that's really what you're talking about.
Yes.
Is, you know, you can't just sit and paint and expect someone to find you.
I think you have to give yourself permission as a creative person to veer away from the work of creating, mm-hmm. to devoting a certain percentage of your professional life to promoting your business. Chiropractors that I know, for example, are taught a model where a certain percentage of their work life, and it may be 20%, it's a big number, has to involve promoting themselves professionally. And I think, oh my God, that's so good. Artists aren't taught that. Psychotherapists aren't taught that. That should be inserted from day one into the work. So if a creative person, let's say, designates 5 hours a month to promoting their business, ideally more, maybe 10 hours, maybe 15, and thinks about, how am I going to get myself out there? So you have to think about, who's your target audience? Who are the, you know, what are the demographics of people that follow you? Are they older people, younger people, redheads, blah, blah, blah? Where do they live?
Right.
How much do they spend? And then you have to target yourself to put your work, your name, your website, your social media pages in the places where they are so they find you.
Mm-hmm.
And then start sharing yourself. And sharing yourself, maybe sharing your work and sharing the inspiration of your work, sharing little snippets about your personal life that people are fascinated with.
Oh, we all are voyeurs.
Of course.
I mean, over COVID, we saw some incredible stuff on social media and the arts.
Totally. I bet certain people flourished.
And so a good place, if I were making something and I would start collecting, like, how are these other artists doing it? And like, pick and choose, like kind of like when you're designing something, like your kitchen.
Just saying.
That you start looking at things that you like and, you know, even reaching out to the artist and saying, how are you doing this? Share some of your expertise with me.
So you're saying artist to artist.
Artist to artist.
Absolutely.
I feel like peer-to-peer has been some of the best learning that I've witnessed.
Yes. Artist to artist will understand each other more.
Yeah.
They speak the same language, but they feel like, because they're in competition with each other, that they can't reach out.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah, it is bullshit.
Go for it. You're going to learn so much that way.
Are you going to make a friend?
Yes, hopefully.
Hopefully.
Frenemy.
A frenemy.
someone you love and compete with at the same time.
Isn't that life?
Isn't that life?
That's so funny.
I use a great analogy. My father had a clothing store when we were growing up. It was called Miller's, and two doors down in the mall was a women's clothing store called Dorothy's. And he spent his life counting Dorothy's bags because A, it was his nemesis, and B, they were in competition with each other. And I share this story with my artist clients and my creative clients because if you spend your whole life looking outside of yourself and think that they're doing better and take inventory of their success, you're diminishing something within yourself. And why not join forces and grow and learn from what you can offer each other and support each other instead of keeping space and distance?
So I've been thinking a lot about artists in the community and how much value they really
do. This is too big not to include.
Okay.
So artists as problem solvers have a unique vantage point of their own. And too many industries eliminate creativity as part of what they do. And imagine that every single business pulled in one artist or one group of artists to consult with everything that they do, not only from the design perspective, but from the product perspective,
Absolutely.
From the viewpoint of what they are selling to the world.
Mm-hmm.
It would be incredible.
It would be incredible. And so I started doing a little research on this, and the city of Boston, so the mayor's office, since 2015, they've been doing artists in residencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have two or three artists every year. And the recent one that I just read about that I found so interesting was that there's this young woman who runs an organization called Dance Abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a professional dancer, but she also has some challenges, mm-hmm. physical challenges. And she is a resident, artist resident, working with the transportation department.
Beautiful.
In the city of
so
Boston.
Good.
And so she's sharing, she's doing a lot of studying and a lot of conversations and a lot of visiting other cities and coming back to Boston and saying, hey, it's really difficult to move around in the city when you have physical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that so... talk about humanity again.
Yeah.
You know, like this artist perspective. And then she's going to, I believe she went to Montreal where she said, this is a city I can move in.
Wow.
This is very welcoming to everybody. I just find that so interesting. And then there's also like a documentarian
mm-hmm.
who's taking, working with the planning department.
So I'm
it's fascinating,
loving
right?
this idea and imagining that you, in all of your spare time at the Arts Foundation, can
create
deliberately
that.
Link all of the members of your organization with businesses that would never even think about
right.
having consultants.
That's right.
And see what happens as a result of that.
Yeah, and we're not talking about, you know, hiring an artist to come in to design your logo.
No, no.
We're talking about what are some serious challenges that you may be having.
Mm.
And, you know, like I think of an interview I did with Susan Blood, who's a writer and she works at the Fine Arts Work Center. And she's also a Arts Foundation mm-hmm. Fellow for the written word. And I remember asking her at the time she was writing her book, I said, how did you just keep writing? And you have two kids,
mm-hmm.
you have a career, like what, how did you get it done? And she essentially, it's the path of least resistance
yeah.
rule, right?
Yeah.
So she got a little tiny computer
yeah.
and she would write in the car while she was waiting for her kids.
Yeah.
So it was the spaces in between
yeah.
and that time that she took the opportunity for herself to keep creating.
What a great inspiration or metaphor for another business who
right.
has nothing to do with creativity or writing, but can hear that story and learn something from her own experience and apply it either to themselves or to their business.
Absolutely. It's this those times in between. Like, oh, yeah. I don't have the time. I'm too busy. Well, I just saw an artist do this. Right. And she wrote a book, you know, doing it that way. I also, Sally Maver, the fiber artist, you know, I interviewed her and she said she was so articulate. I mean, she's got decades of experience and training. She went to RISD. She knows Oren.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, you know, how did you get to this place of being so clear about your point of view? Because it's very hard. And she said, I write everything down. I journal, journal, journal. And it's helped me immensely.
Wow.
She said, sometimes I would have an idea and I'd just start talking about it to anybody that would listen.
How cool.
And she's
it's a
like,
great piece of advice.
Yeah. And she's like, and nobody, and she's like, even myself, I wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
But I'd started to write down my-
And it would lead
my,
to something.
Yeah.
Wow. That just reminded me of the book, The Artist's Way, that was so popular many years ago. And some thought it was cliche, but for others, it unlocked something in themselves by giving themselves time to write and do the deeper exploration inside to figure out, how do I become more creative? How do I create a bigger impact in the world through my own creativity?
Right.
Which is what you're talking about with businesses too.
Yeah. Like it's really this getting that perspective of these creative problem solvers is just so
amazing,
invaluable. But one last question for
okay.
you. Self-care. How can artists take good care of themselves?
Step outside.
Get some
Let me explain that a little bit. Again, hyper-focus. It's not at all unusual for artists to sequester themselves into their studios or sequester themselves in their work and live inside a box of that. And the best way for self-care is a variety of experiences. So I always tell people, leave the Cape, cross the bridge, travel, find new inspiration, new land, new energy in whatever way you can that speaks to you. And of course, what we were saying earlier that's so vital and so scary, establish a network of connections that inspire you. And so it might be other artists, or I collect friends that are entrepreneurial in their own ways. And they may be 40 years younger than me. They may be 40 years older than me. And we have incredible conversations about life. And it's so rich.
Mm.
So those would be my quick answers. You know, sleep, exercise, diet, blah, blah, blah. But we're talking about nurturing the soul as opposed to just eating well.
That's right. And stepping away from the work to take a breath.
It's so vital. It's so important.
Yeah. I see there's this very strong connection many times with artists and nature.
Yes.
And so it's like critical, right?
Yeah.
For that connection.
And give yourself a different landscape to contemplate. Mm. Frequently, Cape Cod artists are kind of immersing themselves in the same scene. Go somewhere else. Challenge yourself. Go to a gritty city that you hate. And see what happens.
And say hi. And see what happens. What about resources? Do you have any recommendations for resources?
Well, you're asking a psychotherapist that question. So the resources that I would offer are different from others. They would be resources oriented towards self-growth or self-calming. Resources. So there's a lot of apps out there these days for mindfulness, and mindfulness can be the pause button from creativity. OHM, I think it's OHM. There's a bunch of mindfulness apps. Just kind of go on the app store and see what speaks to you.
Yeah.
Psychotherapy, of course. Please consider psychotherapy. I have had over the years so many artists that come to me for their creative struggles, which of course are a metaphor for the struggles in life. And not only has it helped with their professional lives, but it's also helped with whatever the entanglements are internally. Mm. So good referrals for psychotherapy is great. And the other resources are joining local art organizations and connecting with other creative and like-minded people instead of being secluded at home.
Hosted by Arts Foundation's Executive Director Julie Wake, the series is an ode to the artistic process and its unique manifestation on Cape Cod and beyond. Thanks for listening.
This is fun.
So fun.
It's like working on a TEDx talk all over again.
It really is. We should write a TED talk for this.
Oh, that would be great.
All the things we learned about working with artists.
So good.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. This is a lot of fun.
Let's do it again next week.
I'd love it. Sold.
Oh, I forgot to hit record. I'm just kidding.